New Horizon has been serving the church in Northern Ireland since 1989, and we're delighted to bring you this talk today. We trust you will be blessed through this ministry.
Well, good evening, everybody. I do apologise to anyone from Mark's church who was expecting a kind of different Ariana than the one you have. Do you know, it's not actually the first time that that's happened. There was a time when I was preaching somewhere and I was going back to the pastor's house for lunch with him and his wife, and they had told their daughter, who was about 9, that Ariana was coming for lunch. And so when we arrived and the front door flung open and this small child looked up at me with great expectation, and then a split second later with utter devastation, running away going, "That's not Ariana Grande." To be fair, I have had the name a lot longer than her. So, well, last night we kicked off the theme Joy from Ashes, and I spent a little bit of time really helping us come to terms with the fact that we even have ashes, and how to respond in times when we are what could be called in a cave season. And tonight I want to go into speaking a little bit more about the breakthrough aspect, I guess that encounter moment, the time when we can shift and we feel ourselves shifting into the joy and the breakthrough. And I want to just say this about breakthrough, that breakthrough is almost always not the end. Though it might be something we look forward to, we are praying for, we are in faith for, and you know, we see things shift and then we might have an encounter and then suddenly feel this breakthrough moment. Breakthrough is never really the end, it is in fact the beginning. Because every breakthrough also needs walkthrough. We can be in the habit, I think, sometimes of putting so much emphasis on the breakthrough that we dismiss the power of walkthrough. And so in the next few minutes I'm going to be talking really about the walkthrough, and it's not quite as popular. You know, the breakthrough is wow, that's the bit we all want to hear about and know about and be encouraged in, but I'm going to be talking about walkthrough, which is a little bit more ow, because another word for walkthrough is process. There, I said it. We don't really like process. I don't know why that is. I think maybe we're conditioned a little bit nowadays to want everything instantly. We want the miracle. We want the 5 quick tips to do something quicker. We want Amazon to be, do you know, actually I fall foul of this the other day when I found myself being cross at Amazon who didn't deliver at 10 p.m. on the same day that I ordered it, even though they promised they would. And I was about to send an angry email and realize that A, there are way too many other important things in life, and B, can I really not wait until tomorrow? And we are conditioned with instant this and instant that and instant the other to expect and want and desire and suddenly and immediately and now please a magic wand. And I have news for you today, and that is that God in fact likes process. I don't know why, we have a slight disagreement about it, me and him, but he does like it. And I know this because he modeled it to us. You see, God in all of his infinite power and in his ability and in creation, when we look, he could have, I believe, put everything in place, from the stars to the tiniest molecule to everything that we know and see about the universe. He could have created it in a moment, in a breakthrough moment. He could have done it with a breath, a thought, an instant miracle of creation. I believe he's absolutely possible that he could have done that, and yet he chose to submit himself to process. He chose day by day, step by step, season by season, layer after layer. He chose to submit all of his power of infinite instance into process. And not only that, but he actually celebrated imperfection. He celebrated incompleteness. He celebrated process by, at the end of every season of time when he had created something, to say, "It is good. It's not finished. We've got a long way to go yet, but it is good. You know, process is powerful, and process has purpose. It builds something deep inside of us that will always outlast a single momentary encounter. And I want to take us to a story in 2 Kings where we see a really good example of someone who was expecting God to come through with breakthrough. They wanted an instant encounter. They wanted the joy. They wanted that moment of healing, of transformation, of it's all going to be okay now. They came with that, and instead we see a different story unfold, and it's found in 2 Kings 5, and I'm going to start with verse 1, always a good place to start. It says this, "Now Naaman was a commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy." So here we have a good man, a victorious man. God had chosen to use him mightily, but we all have buts. You are all sitting on yours right now. We all have stuff. We all have issues. We all have things that kind of can get in the way. And I'm going on a little sidetrack here because I just want to point out that God can use us despite our buts. God had already used Naaman to bring about a great victory despite his issue, despite what he was dealing with. And sometimes I think we have much higher standards of who and what God will use than God has. And I want to encourage someone in here today that not to use the stuff as an excuse not to be used by God. I mean, you look in the Bible and it's full of people with buts. Full of, you know, Moses who had anger issues and David who had lust issues and Saul who was desperately insecure and Rahab who was a prostitute and Thomas who was a doubter. We have Paul who was a murderer, and we even have an example of God using a donkey to speak. Actual words. Opened up a donkey's mouth, spoke words to a man of God, which kind of makes me feel better, holding a microphone. It's kind of my, like, if God can use a donkey, I think I'm going to be okay. Having said that, despite our buts, and there's always going to come a time when God will give us an opportunity to deal with our buts, to deal with our stuff, because if we don't, it's going to start taking pieces off of our life. It's going to start becoming diminishing to us. And Naaman had come to a point, though he had been used mightily by God, though he had seen victory, he had come to a point where he realized he needed to get help. He needed to have a breakthrough. And so we find in 2 Kings 5, verse 9 to 12, that he goes with his horses and chariots, and he stops at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him to say, "Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me, stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. And here we have a perfect example of a person who wants an instant miracle, instant magic wand experience. And I know, because I've been this person, I have spent many times and many prayers saying, "God, if you could only just take this away, if you could come in with your mighty power and wave your hand over this issue and remove it from my life, let me not have to deal with this anymore." And we can get frustrated sometimes when, like Naaman, instead of the miracle we thought we'd get in an instant, there's a process attached to it. You see, Naaman wanted to be a passive recipient of God's power, to sit back and let God do it all. But instead, he was invited by God to partner in a powerful process. The fact is that sometimes we have a much larger part to play in our own breakthroughs than we want to admit. Now, I don't actually blame Naaman for his reaction. I understand it, especially with regards to the river being dirty. I've seen the River Jordan with my own eyes on a visit, and it is indeed dirty. It is like brown, and there's like flies everywhere, and there's things floating in it that I didn't really want to get close enough to see what it was. And, you know, I understand from Naaman's perspective that it doesn't make any sense. The process he's been invited to go on makes absolutely no sense to him. How can a dirty river make me clean? Have I come all of this way? Have I done all of this stuff? Have I done all the things I'm supposed to do simply to be told to get into a dirty river to make me clean? For us, that might look like, really, have I been hurt so much? Have I been mistreated so much? Have I gone through all the stuff I've gone through only for you to tell me, God, that my way to freedom is forgiveness? No. That is a dirty river. I'm going to get in a river called forgiveness and dip and dip and dip and dip and keep forgiving. That makes no sense to me. How can me releasing them be releasing me? Makes no sense. And so, like Naaman, we get to a point where we throw our hands up in the air and go, well, that wasn't the miracle I was coming for. I wanted someone to pray over me, freedom from all the hurt and pain. I didn't want to have to go and forgive. Nobody said anything about forgiveness. How can giving, when I've barely got enough for myself, be a key to overflow? Doesn't make any sense. It's a dirty river. How can surrender, which feels like weakness, actually be the source of strength? It makes no sense. It is a dirty river to us. Like I mentioned last night, how can worship, when we least feel like it, be the very thing that changes our feelings? It makes no sense. So I understand Naaman's response. I see myself in his response. Thankfully, Naaman comes to his senses. And in verse 14, we see that he chooses to change his mind and be obedient to what he's been told. So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Do you know that there's always purpose in God's process? God isn't, you know, wanting us to just jump through hoops for his pleasure. There's purpose in the process that he's asking us to enter into. Naaman wanted to be healed on the outside, but God had a much bigger plan. He was going to do a much better job and heal Naaman on the inside too. And I'm going to share with you 3 P's of the powerful process, or 3 P's of purpose in powerful process, if you want an extra P. Just to pull out some of the things that I can see happening in this story that maybe we can apply to our lives too. And the first P is that Naaman's pride was put aside, and that one even rhymes for you. And by that I mean that Naaman, as we read, was a general, he was a commander. He had an entourage with him. Everybody knew who he was, what he had accomplished. He had chariots, he had servants, he had his armor on. No doubt he was well known. He had reputation, he had strength, he had victory. The last thing Naaman wanted to do is to go to a public place like the river and take off his armor to show weakness, to show vulnerability, maybe even to show parts of his body where there may have been leprosy visible. And some of us go around life like that. We don't want to show weakness. We don't want to show vulnerability. We don't want to show need or failure. That's pride. Pride is self-reliance. Pride is self-importance. Pride is protecting ourselves from the need to need. To fix ourselves quietly. No doubt That is why he wanted to have a quick wave of the wand by the man of God where nobody could see. And instead he's having to take off his armor, and maybe all he had on underneath was a cotton tunic, and where the children are playing in the river, God bless them, where the women are cleaning the clothes, God help them. He has to now dip down in front of everybody and show that he has a need for healing. It is, because if he was to get in that river fully armed, fully armored up, fully in his armor, he would probably only manage one before it would pull him down. If we are to enter into God's process, into that transformational journey with the Lord, we have to be prepared and have the courage to take off the things that we hide behind, to take off the things that we use to protect ourselves, to stop fortifying ourselves and be prepared to step out from behind that and say, I need help, to say, I'm not okay. I know I've presented all of this to everybody, but I care enough about the purposes of God in my life to say I'm not okay. You know, a few years ago we went skiing, and we're a ski family. We love skiing, and I've been skiing for 20 years. And I never fall. That is not me being prideful. That is me just being truthful. I never fall. I make it my business not to fall because I don't like the snow. It's cold, it's wet. Its purpose, in my opinion, is just to get me from A to B as fast as possible. So if I don't have to touch it, all the better. On this particular slope, I don't know what went wrong, something went wrong, and I did a wrong turn, and I felt something pop. Not a good thing when you're skiing. In my knee, I felt it pop. And I sort of fell, and all of my family, my two sons, my husband, my brother-in-law, came from far and wide. I don't know how they saw me, but from far and wide, suddenly I had them all around me. Are you okay? Oh my gosh, are you okay? Is everything okay? I'm like, get away from me. I'm absolutely fine. I don't need your help. I'm okay. Back off. Get away. I never fall. Leave me alone. I'm embarrassed. I'm okay. Stop treating me like a beginner. I know what I'm doing. Back away, everybody. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm okay. And so I get back up on my skis and decide to carry on. And the next turn that I did was the most incredible, painful feeling I've ever had in my knee ever. And I literally felt sick instantly and then sat down and had to ask for help. And my son went and got the help, and then I had the awful embarrassment of being taken off the mountain backwards on a stretcher with everybody around me looking at me with equal amounts of pity and relief, which I know because I have been that person looking at people being taken off the mountain with pity and relief that it's not me. And here I am, that person lying on my back, strapped to the stretcher. And as I'm going back down the mountain and it's snowing on me and I'm really fed up, I feel God say to me, isn't it interesting how rescue didn't come until you said you weren't okay? And for some of you, you are praying for rescue, but you haven't told anybody that you need it. You are in your rooms crying out to God for help, for rescue. You want the quiet wave of the magic wand over your life. God, can you just quietly fix me? Can you quietly sort my life out? Can you quietly just do it in an instant, Lord? I need the joy bit. I need all the breakthrough bit. But no, don't let me have to go and tell people that I might actually need some help with this. Naaman understood that. The second P that we can find in Naaman's story is that persistent obedience was grown. He was told to dip seven times, and seven is one of those symbolic numbers in the Bible. It has an extra meaning, and it basically means completion, perfection. In other words, what the man of God was telling Naaman was, you get in that river, even though it doesn't make sense, and you dip until it's done. You keep going. You don't stop until it's finished. You keep forgiving. You keep renewing your mind. You keep reading your Bible. You keep going to church. You keep singing his praises, even when you don't feel like it. You keep submitting to the process. You see, there's a spoiler alert here. It's not done until we stand before the throne of grace. The scripture reading we had, he's begun a good work in us and he'll carry it through to completion, is another word for saying don't stop dipping until it's done. You're not going to get done this side of heaven. You might as well stop trying to have the instant thing so that you can now be perfect and live a perfect life. That's not how it works. We are on a journey. We are going from glory to glory. The work that's being done in us by him will not be completed until we stand before him. So we have to commit to being persistently obedient to him. It turned out when I had my accident that I actually completely and utterly ruptured my ACL, which is a ligament behind your knee that you need to keep your knee stable. It's the thing that stops your knee going the wrong way. And it was very difficult to walk. And I had to go on a bit of a rehabilitation because this happened in the February, and in the July, I had agreed to climb Machu Picchu in Peru, well, climb it on horseback, actually, 6 hours a day on a horse, 15,900 feet up in the Andes to raise money for Mercy. These are the kind of things you do when you lead a charity. And so I decided that even though I didn't have an ACL, I was still going to try and do this challenge. So I went to a physiotherapist who I explained the situation to him because I couldn't have the operation for restructure until after this date. And he looked at me and went, oh, you're one of those people, are you? I said, yes, I am. Just tell me how to make this work. So he gave me a bunch of exercises, which I faithfully did. I kept being persistently obedient to what the professional told me to do. Day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out, I did it. I strengthened my muscles. I strengthened my knee. I was able to do the challenge, put my all into it with the help of prayer and painkillers. And it worked. It was really good. And I did the challenge, was so pleased, and came back. And then a few weeks later, my knee started really playing up again. And so I went back to the physio and I said, I'm doing something wrong. He said, well, are you still doing your exercises? I said, no, I did the challenge already. I don't need to do the exercises. He's saying, no, you misunderstood me. The exercises I gave you weren't so that you could do the challenge. They were so that you could do your life. You'll have to do these for the rest of your life. I was like, oh. I'm kind of here to tell you the same message. The things we do in our Christian walk, the disciplines we have, aren't there just to get us over bad seasons. They're not there just to set us free from things in the past or to get us through dark times. They are there for life. These are disciplines of life. And so we need to change our perspective sometimes from it being, I need a miracle, I need to come forward for prayer, though there's nothing wrong with that. I need this instant in terms, and changing the perspective to actually there's things I need to do and incorporate into my everyday life so that I can keep strengthening. I can keep dipping in a river that doesn't make sense, but I know it's making me clean. And the third P, my favorite one, is that personal relationship was started. You see, Naaman came to the man of God and almost went away in a huff saying, I thought that he would come out and call on the name of his God. It wasn't Naaman's God. Naaman had heard about God. Someone had told him that there was a God in Israel who might be able to help him. And Naaman went because someone else's revelation of God got him there. I thought he would call on the name of his God. And here we have, after he puts his pride aside, he takes off the armor that he's been hiding behind. Here we have, after he's been persistently obedient to the thing that didn't even make sense to him, we have him say in verse 17, or in verse 15, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel." And in verse 17, he says, "I will never again worship any other God but the Lord." We have a man who's gone from his God to my God. And how did that come about? Would he have had that revelation with a quick wave of the hand and on your way? I wonder whether it would always be the man of God's God, Elisha's God, who healed me. But because of the process that he submitted to, because of him having the courage to put his pride aside, having the humility to bow his knee in the river, to surrender, he received more than healing on the outside. His heart changed. He recognized that the God was also his God, that God was also his God. It's a beautiful picture of God's heart towards us as his people. Oh, he will do the miracles. I've seen him do them time and time again. Yes, you will have breakthrough, but oh, it's the walkthrough where you get to have that deep, intimate connection with him. It's about that sense of closeness that forms in the process. I don't know when it happened for Naaman, whether it was the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh dip, when it was when he came out of the water and realized that he could see change happening. I don't know, but I do know that it lasted. You know, God has no interest in abandoning us to the process. He's not laying a load of obstacles out for us and then moving back and watching as we try and make them happen. No, no, he's with us in it. This is the wonder of our God, that he would submit himself to process, to model the importance of it, and then be with us as we go through ours. In Psalm 23, it says, "Even though I walk through the valley," hello, it's not "even though I break through the valley of the shadow of death." No, no, "even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." Why? "Because you are with me." Whatever it is we are going through, whatever it is we are walking through, whatever process we are finding ourselves in right now, we serve a God who is with us. And tomorrow night, I'm going to spend a bit more time exploring what that means. What does it mean when he is with us? What does that look like to have his presence with us when we are going through difficult times? But for the rest of this time, I wonder whether we can actually stand together if you are able. And I'm going to invite the worship team to come up, because I want to spend a little bit of time praying. Because you can all stand up if you are able to. I know it feels like an abrupt change, but when I was praying earlier, really felt that I needed to give enough time at the end of this meeting for God to be able to speak directly to some of you, not just through me. I think there's things that he wants to say to you that are just to you. And so often when we get into this sort of atmosphere, we can quickly move from listening to someone speak to then being in corporate worship. And I wanted to create a little bit of space, a little bit of time for you to connect. Just take a moment. Because I know some of you are feeling like you're walking through that valley of the shadow of death. And the trouble is, you've sat down because you're tired and you're fed up, and the breakthrough you've been praying for isn't coming. And the thought that actually you have to walk through it is a devastating thought to you right now. Because you don't have the energy. You don't have the motivation. And I want to share with you that if that's you and you identify with that picture, then when I was praying earlier, the picture I saw so clearly was of you sitting down in this dark place, in this dark valley. And I saw Jesus come and stand beside you and to pick you up on your feet. This is not the place to stop. You see, in Psalm 23, a couple of verses before, it says, he lets us lie down in green pastures and leads us beside still waters. He restores my soul. That's where you stop. You stop in the green pasture. You stop beside the quiet stream. You stop in the place where he's inviting you to be renewed and restored and to be rejuvenated. You stop here in this moment. This is where you stop, where you receive, so that you then have the ability to keep walking through the valley of the shadow of death. And so we're going to create a moment where you can receive. For your presence here tonight. Thank you for the encouragement you want to give us. Lord, for every person in this tent who feels overwhelmed with what they're facing, who feels right now unable to keep putting one foot in front of the other, I pray right now for an impartation of your grace. Lift them, Lord. Put them on their feet. Strengthen them from the inside out. I speak hope into your heart right now. This is not, God hasn't got you this far just to get you this far. This is not where your story ends. He began a good work in you, and he will carry it through to completion.
Thank you for listening to this talk. If you would like to know more about New Horizon, please visit our website at newhorizon.org.uk.